Now, it's time for the Cybersecurity News Bite with Jim Guckin.
Cybersecurity News Bite, episode 30 for October 10th, 2022. Emotet's current tactics, Zimbra's unpatched RCE flaw, Toyota customers prepare for some phishing emails, and City of Tucson discloses data breach. Now, to stay relevant in cybersecurity, you really kind of have to be aware of, you know, current tactics that are out there. And I just happened to see Emotet's creeping kind of back up in the news, and it kind of made me curious and see where it has come over time. Now, for those of you who are not aware, Emotet first appears as a banking Trojan back in June of 2014. In 2016, it gets the major upgrade that we're probably most security experts are aware of at this point, which is it gets that all-purpose malware loader included into it. In January of 2021, the cybersecurity people as a whole took a sigh of relief as law enforcement had a strike to take down the people who were running it at the time. But now, currently, it's being run by a different group of people with different infrastructure. This is being run by a group called Mummy Spider. You may also know them as TA-542 if you are, depending on how you know ATP groups. And one of the reasons why I like Emotet, or I shouldn't say I like, hackers like, I mean, I like it because from the programming thing, it's kind of genius. But hackers like it because it's, well, it's been around for a while. It's very versatile when it comes to the things it can do and the different attack vectors it has. It can remain hidden in systems due to some of these things programmed into it for very long periods of time. But, you know, it kind of uses their favorite way of getting in, which is emails that have a compromised attachment to them, some kind of spam email or phishing email that they currently get. So they open this up and they have a problem. So currently, VMware has said that it observed three different attacks going on currently. One just a basic Excel macro, one an Excel macro with PowerShell. Another is a Visual Basics application with PowerShell. So once again, usually very good thing. If you can't afford to do it in your environment, please make sure you're turning off PowerShell. And some of the current things that these PowerShells do are they're using the mshta.exe file, which is located on your computer, to launch a malicious HTA file, which has the Emotet malware part of it. Now, right now, in the last year or so, about 1/4 of all attacks using Emotet are coming in via Excel documents. So it's really a good thing to kind of manage the Excel documents to come in, and you kind of manage the way you expect or deal with them or scan them. Now, if you're not familiar, the MSHTA and PowerShell are both very popular tactics for hackers, often referred to as lulbins, which is living off the LAN binaries. And they like these because, one, they are signed by Microsoft, they are Microsoft products, and they are default trusted by Windows. So you can see why using your malware to exploit these kind of attacks, you know, kind of resonates at home because they can do a lot with it. So between March and June of this year, in monitoring these attacks, they're using Epoch 5's command and control server. So if you're familiar with those, keep an eye out for those command and control servers, as you've seen. The most recent iterations, too, have some handy-dandy new plugins that you would expect with most, you know, software improvement programs. It has been designed to capture credit card data from Google Chrome browsers. You know, if you save your credit card information, which I highly recommend you don't, but if you do, this has a part to rip that out now. It also has a spreader module that, you know, kind of looks on your network using the SMB protocol. So definitely block that between network segments if you can, or just block it in general. Also has a new spamming module. So once it has access to your computer and access to your email program, it can then spam stuff out. And it has a nice handy dandy ability to steal your credentials and for Outlook and Thunderbird clients, which are two of the most popular ones out there. So, you know, if you're using a Windows system, this is definitely something you need to be paying attention. I mean, honestly, you should have been paying attention to this all along. Nothing has changed. It's the same kind of tactics they've been using, but you need to protect yourself. And I really feel like if you're not keeping up with Emotet, being that it's one of the major ones out there, you need to pay attention to what the tactics are so that you can see and predict and scan and do all this other stuff to protect yourself. It's really what it comes down to, is protecting yourself against these kind of tactics the best you can. I wish we could block all email or all attachments. No business is going to do that. It's not feasible. But knowing where to look for, if you do some research and you get some of those Epoch 5 command and control servers, you're not ever going to catch them all. They're going to keep changing, but you may be able to see, you know, easily if it's on your network or not through some controls or software that you should have, or even hardware that's monitoring your network, that you should be able to look for these IP addresses talking out. So highly important to do, but be aware, Emotet's still out there. You know, if you thought that the Conti takedown was the end of it, like I said then, it's not going to be. It's going to keep continuing. So just be on the lookout for that. Now, I really wish that this was the first time we were talking about Zimbra on the show. But like a lot of things that we talk about, because it's popular, it is obviously attacked more often than not. Well, there is an active exploit going against Zimbra now, which is listed as CVE-2022-41352. And as always, it is a CVSS score of 9.8 out of 10. And this one can be dangerous because it allows malicious actors to kind of upload and run files in the Zimbra system. And this flaw really goes into, which I think is a devious one, which is part of Zimbra's actually antivirus engine. This was first found in September of 22. There is no fix yet for this vulnerability. Though there is kind of a workaround where Zimbra is saying, hey, look, if you have this, please make sure to install the PAX utility, PAX utility, and then restart the Zimbra system. And what this does is, the vulnerability is in the antivirus. It uses CPIO to decompress files. If you use PAX, it'll use PAX first to decompress the file. But if the PAX isn't installed, the antivirus will fall back to using the CPIO, and that's where attackers can really start to do it. The attacker doesn't need to be authenticated. It will kind of decompress the file and run it to see if there's a virus on it. This allows it to overwrite files on the server if it wants to, including the Zimbra's web root. So this can be very dangerous to your environment. Now, this impacts Zimbra versions 8.8.15 and version 9.0. Or if you have Linux versions, Oracle Linux 8, Red Hat Enterprise Linux 8, Rocky Linux 8, CentOS 8. The only exception that you may take a breather on is if you have Ubuntu, which, because PAX is already installed by default. So, once again, if you have any of these versions, please install PAX as soon as physically possible to protect yourself from malicious email. Because all it takes is a malicious email to come in with a compressed file using either CPIO or TAR. The weak server gets it, and when it goes to look to see if it has a virus, you know, in it, using the AMA VIS protocol, it extracts it. CPIO doesn't have a secure place to do it, so it just kind of runs it, and now the attacker can write to any path that the Zimbra user can have access to, and usually it's a higher level account because it's processing mail and being able to run things to run virus checks on. So very key that if you have Zimbra, you either A, make sure that you have PAX installed, and that is the default versus CPIO, or you take some other methods to secure this. Now, as the recording, there is no patch currently for it, but I do know Zimbris says that they're in their next patch cycle, they will have a fix for this. So hopefully by the time you're hearing this, you're able to patch and you're already secured against this. But don't let this one go through, because I'm pretty sure that hackers are going to continue to use this one. Zimbra's, you know, it's not the first time we've talked about it on the show. So, meaning that it's a constant attack surface. Someone will find this out. So please make sure you patch if the patch is available by the time this comes out. Or you use this PAX alternative to kind of give yourself a workaround in the meantime until this patch comes out. So, once again, Zimbra's version 8.8.15 and 9, or if you have a Linux, Oracle, Red Hat, Rocky, or CentOS version 8, please make sure that you are doing everything you can. You should be updating those quite frequently anyway, but make sure you install PAX to kind of get around this. Now, the third thing I want to talk about this week, which is a concern for me, because as companies start to gain more information about us out there, the potential for leaks becomes monumentous, because we're trusting companies to have our data. But now it's not just one or two companies, it's thousands of companies that could have our data. Well, Toyota is pretty much warning customers, hey, look, you might be getting some kind of phishing emails or spam emails or just downright emails you may not expect. And all this stems from the fact that they leaked customer information. There was about 296,000 pieces of customer data that potentially leaked. And this all comes from information gathered by their smartphone application. They sent an email out to all of their customers saying, hey, look, the risk of phishing, spam, or other kinds of unwanted emails could occur. Now, they're not saying this information was definitely leaked, but it is a large amount of customer data that you have to kind of be aware of, because this impacts all customers who signed up for their app since July of 2017. Obviously using your email address. They said the information exposed was only email addresses and customer numbers, meaning, I guess, the number that they used to identify you. There was no sensitive information in there. There was no phone numbers, no credit cards, no names. Though I should say, only because, you know, I live in this world sometimes, that this information isn't really hard to pair together with other information that's been leaked online. So yeah, so I may just have your email address and your customer number. But guess what? If I have your email address and I go to another leak and boom, that has your email address, well, now I may have your name. I may have, you know, part of some other information, social security number. Depending on the leaks, a determined attacker. I'm not going to say your everyday attacker, your scam artist, your people trying to weasel money out of people. They're probably not the ones you have to worry about. But someone who is trying to target maybe the organization you work for, they can kind of patch this all together and, you know, have a good kind of profile on you and say, hey, look, you know, we're Toyota. Here's your name. Here's your address. You know, be aware. Now, I should say, Toyota has said that right now there are no current reports of this information being used. It all had to do with a contractor, which is a third party from Toyota, who uploaded the source code for the application into a public environment, which could allow people to access this data. Toyota says at this time, there has been, according to their research, they haven't detected any third party accessing this source code, but you never know. And this impact was there from December of 2017 up until last month, September of 2022. So remember, when you're trusting anyone with your information, it could, obviously, this day and age, go beyond that person you trusted. So let's say I trust Toyota and they trust someone else, and that's a third party they're working for. that I may not trust that third party, but who cares what I did? I already trusted Toyota. But I want to take this into just saying that if your organization, a lot of organizations nowadays, you know, you're downsizing, you're keeping things lean, you may be relying on contractors, but you need to be checking on what your contractors do, because if they expose data for your organization, you are still responsible. You gave them that data. You're responsible for it. You're responsible to tell your customers, hey, look, we trusted X party with it, and well, they made a mistake, and now, you know, your data may have been exposed. It's just, you know, what are your customers going to think about you? Because I know every time I get an email saying, hey, we have your data, and you know, there was a breach, or there was a leaked data, or anything that's from a company that I have trusted with any level of my data, I do kind of have a negative view on it. And there are some organizations who take hard stances against stuff like that. So your application, if you're a software provider, may not be used. Your consulting company may not be used. These are all things you have to think of when you're trusting someone else. Because yeah, they mishandled the data. It's your data, you're the one responsible, and you're the one who trusted that third party. How will your customers view you? Because, you know, I don't think, some people aren't numb to it yet. And that could be very dangerous towards your brand. So, in this case, Toyota didn't detect anything that was used or anything that was accessed. They let people know out of an abundance of caution, but there are still people who got that email who are going to have a negative impact, a negative association when it comes to Toyota. And that's something you need to make sure that you're okay with your brand. Because when you trust someone else to save money, this is what happens. For our final story this week, the city of Tucson, well, they had a little bit of a data breach, and some of the personal information from 123,000 people was exfiltrated from their network. This includes names, social security numbers, driver's license or state identification number, and passport. This is just scary. So what had happened was between May 17th and May 31st, there was a malicious actor on the city's network. And on May 29th, the city learned of this malicious activity, or detected this malicious activity somehow, of this user account. And, you know, did what I think is typical and people would probably get mad about, which is they probably investigated. So May 29th, May 30th, and then finally on May 31st, they cut this account out. And this is what you do to make sure that you don't, that you can totally shut this person out of your system, that they can't trigger something to do damage. This is normal. So between May 31st and August 3rd, I guess there was an investigation that was going on, because on August 4th, they learned that some documents may have been copied, and they launched a more in-depth investigation. And on September 12th, the review of information concluded, and they determined that some information was taken. I guess they probably went through some legal stuff. And then on September 23rd is when they started notifying residents that were impacted by this attack that, you know, you're probably caught up in this. The attacker did breach the city's network. They copied a large number of files with sensitive information off the network. And this is something that, you know, can be scary, because government tends to have a lot of information on you. And, well, when it gets leaked, it's pretty bad. Now, I should say, the city of Tucson says right now that there have been no reports that this information has been utilized. But once again, it could be a while before this malicious hacker decides to do anything with it. If they do, it may have just been someone who's in, see what they do, copy out, and then they're done. You never know, but you have to be on the lookout for this. And the city of Tucson has made available for those impacted 12 months of, you know, credit monitoring, which is pretty standard nowadays in the post-breach. I'm sorry. You know, hey, we got your data. And you know, they made their typical things. You know, we take data privacy seriously. We're really sorry, blah, blah, blah. Every company says this. It is the nice platitudes. And I get it. look, from a business perspective, you have to kind of say you're sorry. And look, they may be really sorry. But what I think becomes important is what they're doing to close whatever gaps were available to make this attack so successful. You know, how were you in the network for 2 weeks before they were even aware of it? You know, between 17th and the 28th, what was the account doing that, you know, all of a sudden on the 29th of May, they were aware of what was going on? How do you close this? Is money being properly spent towards, you know, their cybersecurity program? Those are the questions I ask, not because I don't think that the people doing their jobs were doing their jobs right. I've been in a lot of places, especially government, where cybersecurity, yeah, it's there, it's part of what you do, but it's more lip service than anything else that you need to be aware of. And some companies do the same thing. Like, oh, yeah, we have security is important to us, blah, blah, blah. But they don't put the money where they need to. I'm not saying that your security team should have an unlimited budget for this. And even the best tools, I've said 1,000 times, don't always protect you, yeah, when your users are the weakest link. But the most important part of this at this point is the city of Tucson to learn. And I don't expect them to ever tell us. Look, during an investigation, and I'm sure law enforcement's involved, they're not going to say anything, you know, to the public about this. But I'm hoping behind the scenes that Tucson has determined what went wrong and figured out the steps that are needed to make sure stuff like this doesn't happen again. Because the information of 123,000 people being names and social security numbers and driver's licenses, you can open a whole bunch of credit cards in that. It's very dangerous. And I hope, you know, whoever did this just ended up deleting the data or what, because they haven't seen anything being used on it yet. But, you know, time will tell if this data was worth anything. The person may not even be 100% aware of all the data they have at this point, which is also the hard part, because sometimes, you know, they grab a whole bunch of data. They may not be aware of what it is at the time. But then this news story kind of tells them, like, look, you've got some pretty important information. But as I said, they've had the data since May. You would typically expect to see this data starting to leak out there. But, you know, maybe someone's holding it. Maybe there's a ransom going on in the background. We don't know. But I'm hoping that those people impacted aren't impacted too bad. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Cybersecurity News Bite podcast. Make sure you stay safe online, and we'll talk again next week.
You've been listening to the Cybersecurity News Bite with Jim Guckin. Learn more about our show at cybersecuritynewsbite.com.